Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Mary Lee Conicella is the Chief Dental Officer at Aetna, a CVS health company. She leads a team of healthcare professionals that oversee dental clinical initiatives, policies, and claim reviews. She is also responsible for creating programs that engage members and deliver superior health through integration. Dr. Conicella joined Aetna in 1997 and has been involved with several programs, including Aetna's Dental Medical Integration Program, where she published numerous abstracts and articles related to the impact dental care has on overall health. She is also a member of Aetna's Clinical Executive Leadership Council and CVS Aetna's Enterprise-Wide Opioid Task Force, where she and her team members have implemented innovative clinical initiatives that impact the opioid crisis. Dr. Conicella received her Doctor of Medicine in Dentistry degree from Temple University's School of Dentistry and is a fellow of the Academy of General Dentistry. Prior to joining Aetna, she practiced general dentistry for over 15 years and spent many of those years on the clinical faculty at the University of Pittsburgh School of Dental Medicine. Hello, Dr. Conicella. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here. I love your podcast. And please call me Mary Lee.
Mary Lee it is. I'm so happy that you said both. I'm glad that you're giving me the permission to use your first name. And I'm also glad to hear that you're a fan. That makes me super happy. Well, I know that we've communicated back and forth and very, very grateful to have the opportunity to have you on the show today. By the way, you are my first representative of the dental profession on the show. So,
it's an honor.
Virtual confetti's up in the air. Thank you so much for being my first.
That's awesome. I feel very, very privileged.
Excellent. Well, we have lots of questions to ask of you. I'm super excited and very intrigued and curious about your role and the many things that you do within the organization. And some of the listeners today are very familiar with you. Some of them are meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you properly introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Well, thank you. I'm Chief Dental Officer at Aetna and CVS Health. And as you can imagine, I'm fully immersed in oral health in that role, but I'm also a part of Aetna's medical affairs leadership team. So that gives me the opportunity to see lots of different clinical innovations that are happening through a number of our healthcare businesses. So I'm not sort of siloed in dental. I can see things that are happening in medical and pharmacy. And now that we're part of CVS Health, what's happening in the Minute Clinics and the health hubs. So I can now take healthcare to a higher level by advancing oral health equity through collaborations with non-dental clinicians like nurse practitioners or even pharmacists to promote oral health.
You know, your perspective on the entire healthcare industry, particularly through the lens of a dentist, and then being able to see how the interdisciplinary team works together. I cannot wait to hear some stories from you in terms of what you've been able to see. Many of the listeners, I'm sure, you know, I would say 99% of the listeners today are very familiar with CVS Health as an organization. You know, I'm an older individual. I have watched the rise and the growth of the organization from its multiple acquisitions over the course of time, but especially within the last 10 years under Larry Menlo, who was the CEO, and the acquisitions of Aetna, Omnicare, and a variety of other organizations that have really brought the healthcare services and products under one banner. And, you know, I personally believe that there's greater efficiency and greater access, especially to certain populations across the country. And I'm certainly wanting to make sure that we tap into that, because I think that you'll be able to add a different perspective to the entire health equity conversation that's really finally becoming front and center. Let's focus in a little bit more about what your day-to-day looks like. Do you have a team? What is the size of that team? And what are some of the things that you and your team have been instrumental with in terms of advancing the initiatives of CVS Aetna, or maybe some recent successes that you'd like to share on the show in terms of how you and your team have really made a difference in the lives of your members?
Well, I love talking about my team. So I have a team of 12 dentists who report to me. So I actually started out at Aetna 25 years ago as a dental consultant reviewing dental claims. I was also in private practice and teaching at Pitt Dental School. So for a while, I did all three things at the same time. But we do have a great clinical team of general dentists. We have specialists like periodontists, oral surgeons, who are responsible for what we call dental utilization management. So really only about 3% of all the dental claims that come to Aetna Dental get reviewed by a clinician. Most of them pass right through and the member gets their benefit. The claim gets paid very efficiently, but some of the more complex procedures are reviewed by our clinical team. And so I oversee that team. And also involved in that is I have responsibility for our clinical policies. And so deciding about things that we should or should not cover. So there are always new procedures, new technologies coming out in dentistry. And now the codes, the dental codes come out every year. There are new codes every year and those represent new procedures. So we've got a lot of work on our hands constantly to comb through the literature and actually also to be able to be consultative with our customers. A lot of Aetna's dental customers are self-insured. So that means they're the ones that really are paying the claims. We're doing the behind the scenes work. We're doing the administrative work, but they decide about the coverage and what plan design they want. And so we can actually be consultative about new procedures that are coming out and how they fit into a dental plan design. In fact, I'm very proud to say one of the members of my team has a voting seat on the American Dental Association's code committee. His name is Dr. Chuck Stewart. Actually, they just met in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and the whole new set of codes for 2023 has been established. But so that's kind of the day-to-day nitty-gritty, what my team does. But then I also have the honor of working with so many others in our dental organization, like our product team and our strategy team. And then, as I said, I'm also part of medical affairs. So I get to work with our medical directors and with nurses and pharmacists. So in dental, we try to advance health equity by always looking for ways to improve access to care. And that's something that I get to do now being a part of CVS Health. We were mentioned in the NIH report that just came out at the end of December. So the NIH put out a report called Oral Health in America, Advances and Challenges. And it was actually supposed to be a 20-year follow-up to the report that came out in 2000. So the Surgeon General at that time was David Satcher, and he put out this kind of groundbreaking report, first ever report on oral health in America in 2000. And this was intended to be sort of the 20-year follow-up to that. It got delayed a little bit because of COVID, but the report did come out at the end of December. And I'm very proud to say that Aetna and CVS were mentioned in the report, and some of our programs were mentioned in the report. And they are some of the things that I get to work on with this great extended team. So not only my clinicians, but also the rest of our dental product and strategy team, and then the larger medical affairs team.
So I want to stay on this topic because I think it's really valuable to hear about how the National Institute of Health recognized an organization in terms of what it's been doing. Are there specific initiatives that they called out? And can you share with us a little bit in terms of like the results that came from those initiatives and who was mostly impacted through each of them?
Sure. They actually mentioned sort of two different categories of our initiatives. So there was actually an entire section of the report on pain management, substance use, mental health, and reducing dental opioid prescribing has been a big focus for us. We have this huge database that has medical claims and dental claims and pharmacy claims. And so through that data, we're able to identify high prescribers of opioids, and we can send them education, reach out to them with, we actually created a custom patient counseling tool that a dentist can use when they're talking to their patient about a procedure and what to expect as far as pain after a procedure, and then helps them have the conversation about what are their options to manage pain. All of the evidence says that over-the-counter medications like acetaminophen and ibuprofen are more effective for dental pain than an opioid. So we want to sort of amplify that evidence. And so through a number of targeted outreaches to providers, we've actually reduced opioid prescribing overall among our dentists by 19%. And one of the ways that dentists can tend to overprescribe opioids is by the days of the prescription. So in medicine, they're usually looking for physicians who are doing a lot of refills. But in dentistry, that's not such an issue. It's mostly dental pain lasts for 2 to 3 days, and we don't want to see a dental prescription for an opioid that is more than 7 days. And so we've actually seen those 7-day prescriptions come down by 30%. And so we actually got a call out box in that section 5 of the report about all of Aetna's and CVS's initiatives related to reducing opioid prescribing and reducing opioid use and misuse. In addition to the provider education that we was mentioned in the report, they also mentioned CVS's safe disposal program. So that's something that they've implemented over a number of years to help people in the community have a safe way to dispose of extra opioid pills. And then something that you will probably appreciate, they called out a program called Pharmacist Teach. And this is a program that CVS established a number of years ago. It was originally started with pharmacists going out into the community, mostly to high schools, and meeting with classrooms of high school students and talking about the dangers of prescription opioids. Now, a couple of developments have happened. Because of COVID, nobody was really going into schools over the past couple of years, so they turned it into a virtual program as well. But then also, a few years ago, before the pandemic, we got to collaborate with CVS, and we turned the program into a collaborative program where, in many instances, depending on the location, a pharmacist and a dentist or a dental hygienist would go into the school together. And I actually got to do one of those right before the pandemic started, January of 2020. We did one at a local high school here near Pittsburgh, And a pharmacist and I went into a few different classrooms throughout the day. And not only did we talk about the dangers of prescription opioids, we talk about the fact that a young person will typically have their first exposure to an opioid when they get their wisdom teeth out. And so there's the dental connection. And really those students lit up. They really identified with that. And then we throw in other topics like vaping. Vaping was a very hot topic back when I did that pharmacist teach. So those are the types of things that were mentioned in our call out box. And this wasn't specifically mentioned in the report, but something else that we're really proud of was we were the first dental carrier to cover a drug called Exparel. That's an injectable, it's like Novocaine, but instead of being used to make the area numb, it's used after the surgery to provide long-lasting, time-released pain relief. And it had originally been tested in some medical surgeries, but the company that makes Exparel started promoting it for use with oral surgery. And so they started promoting it early on with a group of sort of early adopter oral surgeons for wisdom tooth extractions. And when we heard about it, we thought, like, we really want to learn more. And so we actually started covering it in our dental plans as a pilot. There wasn't even a code for it. So we had to reach out to all of our oral surgeons to explain to them how to submit a claim if they were using Exparel. But we were hearing anecdotally from oral surgeons that if they were using Exparel at the end of an impacted wisdom tooth extraction, in many cases, they didn't prescribe any pain medication at all. The patient was pain-free for 2 days following the surgery. Or we heard some other stories like, I used to prescribe 20 Vicodins and now I prescribe 5. So we were excited about that. And we now, my colleague, Dr. Stewart, was instrumental in getting a code for Exparel. So now there is a way that oral surgeons can report it if they use it. And we also have added something to our provider identifier tool. So if a member of ours is looking for an oral surgeon in our provider tool, they can see a flag that this provider uses sort of a non-opioid alternative.
That's incredible. I mean, the complexity of the system that you're describing, but the stewardship that you and your team are taking in order to be able to drive down incidence of, you know, opioid abuse, and then also to reduce reduction, but then also to teach healthcare providers, especially in the dental realm, like, these are ways that you can approach this subject matter in an efficient and a clinical manner, and then empowering them with the tools. I really appreciate that insights that you are sharing with me on this show. You know, we've talked very briefly about, you know, health equity. And, you know, I know that, as I mentioned earlier in the show, like, that's really been a hot topic for a while. But, you know, I'm curious to understand from your perspective, because you see things and from both an interdisciplinary capacity, but also as a leader within the dental profession, how is oral health or the future of oral health, you know, poised to change or address new challenges that may be in the pike for the next few years? Are there some specific challenges that you're aware of when it comes to being a leader in the oral health space, and how you in your organization, or even if it's not the organization, just the industry in itself, are taking bold moves in order to try to minimize those negative impacts that look like they're around the corner?
So I'll start by sort of answering with current state and then where I see this going. So we were just talking about the NIH report. The other place that Aetna was recognized was for our research that we started publishing back in 2006, was our first published study with Columbia University's Dental School, where Columbia analyzed our medical and dental data. And we published this study that looked at people with chronic conditions like cardiovascular disease and diabetes. And then because all of our dental and medical data is on the same platform, we can sort of look across that data to see if people with those conditions are having dental care. And then we were able to look at outcomes for people with those conditions who had dental care compared to those who did not. And we found a couple of interesting things in that original 2006 study. One was that, like, let's use diabetes as an example. If a member with diabetes had dental care, they had much lower risk scores. So there's software that insurance companies can use to sort of predict, do predictive modeling and predict what a patient's risk is in future years for their condition. And they think about things like how many times have they been to the emergency room? How many other sort of risk episodes have happened to that patient? And what we found is having dental care reduced their risk drastically, like over 20% lower risk if you were having dental care. And then we also looked specifically at those who were treated for periodontal disease, because most of the science connects the inflammation of periodontal disease with inflammation in these conditions like diabetes or heart disease or even pregnancy. And so we found that the members who were treated over the longest period of time for periodontal disease had lower medical costs than those who were maybe just had one periodontal treatment, but then no follow-up. So that got us kind of excited, but then also concerned about our members who aren't going regularly to the dentist, because the statistic is, and I think this is being on the board at the National Association of Dental Plans, I kind of get to see the whole dental benefits picture and not just Aetna. It's pretty common in the industry that maybe only 50% of people use their dental benefits.
Really?
So yes. And that's surprising, right?
Yeah.
And so, so when we saw that there were definitely good outcomes for people with these, we call it like at-risk conditions. So these are the people that really need to be going regularly to the dentist. When we see that their outcomes are better, we just started thinking about, well, how do we get more of these people to go to the dentist? And so in 2007, we launched a program that's still in place today. It's our, we call it DMI, our Dental Medical Integration Program. And it's an automated program, no charge. It's free for any of our customers, any plan sponsor that has Aetna Dental and Aetna Medical. So if they have our medical plan and our dental plan, we already have all the data. So we automatically enroll those customers in this program. They don't pay anything for it. Frankly, they don't even have to know anything about it, which is cool because not that many people know about these connections. And so I like to say we create engagement in our members in their oral health because we reach out to them. And the way we do that is we can identify a member who has diabetes, for example, we'll stick with that. But we also look for a number of different cardiovascular diagnosis codes. We reach out to members who are pregnant, because those are the sort of the three categories of conditions that have the strongest evidence base of having a connection with oral health. But we can identify a member who has diabetes. The system will automatically look to see if they've had a dental visit in the past year. And if they have not, then it targets them to receive outreach from us. And that outreach back in 2007 was mostly a postcard in the mail. Now it's mostly email. But it's sort of a general educational piece that says your oral health is really important to your overall health. And it's really important that you go regularly to the dentist. You can call this toll-free number and we'll tell you more about the program. We'll help you find a dentist if you don't have a regular dentist. And we're actually very effective in getting those people to go to the dentist. Usually at least 50 to 60% of those people who weren't going before start going regularly to the dentist. And then the other aspect of the program, and this is kind of where the health equity piece comes in, is we're also giving those members free services. So yes, they are covered for dental benefits, but usually there's a deductible, or if they, especially if they need periodontal services, then they have some sort of co-insurance out of pocket. What we do is we give them a third cleaning. So you usually get two cleanings for, for free, covered at 100%. We give them a third cleaning. If they have periodontal disease, they can have a number of different periodontal services without any out-of-pocket costs. So we're hoping to remove any of those cost barriers to make sure that members are getting the care that they need. And so those studies were recognized in the report. And so that's kind of our current state. We've been running that program successfully for almost 15 years now. A couple of things I see for the future. The connections are definitely getting broader. There are so many studies coming out now about connections to conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, Sjogren's syndrome. We actually just created something we call a care consideration. It's something that we can do using data that can help close gaps in care. And so we can send alerts to members based on things that we see in the data. Like if members aren't having certain types of visits or getting certain types of tests, we can send them a care consideration alert. We can also send providers alerts. We just created an alert for physicians treating patients who have Sjogren's syndrome. So Sjogren's syndrome has a classic presentation of dry mouth as one of the big side effects, and that can cause a lot of dental problems. So now our system will look through data. And if a member has Sjogren's syndrome and they have no dental visit in the past year, it will actually send an alert, an email or a fax or, you know, whatever way that physician wants to be communicated to. And they'll get an alert that says, please talk to your patient about their oral health and make sure that they're getting dental care. These are things that we're starting to create because the evidence is expanding. So many connections with conditions. And the one condition that's really going to become more prominent is the connection with oral health and mental health or behavioral health. So, like I said, it got a whole its own section in the NIH report. And I think we'll need to be more mindful by doing things like we've been doing with reducing opioids. And we actually recently collaborated with the National Council for Mental Well-Being. And I got to sit on a panel that created a toolkit for behavioral health and oral health providers. So it's a toolkit that they can go out and read now that focuses on ways that behavioral health providers can learn more about recognizing dental issues and vice versa. That dentists have ways that they can learn about some behavioral health conditions. Eating disorders is a common one that comes to mind. Sometimes a dentist might be the first practitioner to identify a patient with an eating disorder, but dentists aren't always super comfortable talking to a patient about something other than their teeth. Certainly they can take their blood pressure and talk about diabetes, but a mental health issue is uncharted territory somewhat. And so this toolkit will help those providers better collaborate on patient care. So that's something I definitely see for the future. And then we still need to really focus on that access to dental care issue. So I described how we're doing it for people who are at risk and have chronic conditions. But we also need to think more about people who live in dental deserts, places that just don't have enough dentists for the population. There's a recent statistic that over 60 million Americans live in dental deserts and don't have good access to dental care. Coincidentally, today, the most recent, I think the April issue of the Journal of the American Dental Association came out, and the cover story is about untreated tooth decay, dental caries in adults. And the statistic in that article is that over 1 in 5 U.S. adults have untreated tooth decay.
We'll be right back after this short break.
These are staggering numbers for me, Mary Lee. I mean, it's really hard for me to believe. It's not that I'm doubting you. It's just when I hear the numbers in such large, you know, proportions, it's really, impressive to see the advances and the initiatives that, your organization is taking, and I'm sure many others as well, to try and help not just educate, but increase access to these types of services so that not just dental health, overall health is impacted. I mean, the connection that you've just mentioned between dental health and mental health is not one that normally just jumps to mind. But the story that you just shared, it makes sense, especially from a clinician's perspective. Like, yeah, there's an opportunity here for dentists to somehow start the conversation, right? And clearly there's, dentists have the ability to then refer them to another partner that may be able to take that patient's care to the next level. But I mean, it has to begin somewhere. And I think that that's a phenomenal way to be able to approach that. Merely, one of the things that you said, early on in our conversation that really has stuck with me is, that you've been with the organization for 25 years. And I mentioned right before the show that, it's so rare to hear that nowadays. In fact, it's even rare to hear individuals with 5 years of employment within the same organization. But it's not just the fact that you serve as the chief dental officer at CVS Aetna. It's, the other things that you consistently do. You mentioned that you're on the board of the National Association of Dental Plans. You are also on the board and you're a member of the New York University College of Dentistry Strategic Planning and Strategy Meeting, Strategies. So, I mean, there's a lot of hats that you wear and a lot of great, opportunities that you're involved in. When it relates to the position that you're in today, you have a team of 12, you went from an individual contributor role as a dental consultant to managing a team that is solely responsible for all dental health. I'd love to have an understanding of some of the conversations that probably took place for you to say yes to this kind of role, because it's not common. I don't really meet a lot of chief dental officers, especially of an organization of this size, but not just the scope and size of what your role and responsibility is. Like, there's a lot of trepidation I know that comes from individuals that are given this opportunity. And I'd love to understand a little bit about how you were able to transition out of the original role that you began with this organization and some of the rungs of the ladder that you experienced and some of the questions you had to probably ask yourself, is this right for me?
I had to do that from the very beginning, even taking that first job with Aetna, because I was in private practice. I was in practice with my husband. He's a full-time practicing general dentist still. And I was also teaching half-time at Pitt Dental School. And Aetna was opening this big dental insurance processing dental service center in Pittsburgh. And they were hiring a clinical team. And I applied just because I loved the idea of having that variety. And didn't even realize that it was going to be a full-time position. I don't know why, I assumed it was part-time. And so when I got hired, I was still able to teach. I was still teaching one day a week for a number of years after starting my role with Aetna. And, it was really fascinating to review dental claims and to see the types of treatment that was out there happening. And a lot of it was really sort of new and innovative. That was sort of the advent of implants getting popular. And so I just really loved that. And I think I took the leap into this industry because I liked the variety and I wanted to see dentistry from more of a population level as opposed to our small private practice. I liked that idea. And so that's kind of what, despite any trepidation, made me want to do it. And then it was really having great teams and great leaders that helped me advance. So I started out a little bit at a time, taking the leadership role for our team in Pittsburgh, taking on leadership of some, we actually have teams all across the country. We have a team in Albany, New York. We have a team in Jacksonville, Florida, Woodland Hills, California. So we're kind of broad and I was able to take progressively higher leadership roles of those teams. And then, as I said, I've had great leaders who put a lot of faith in me, somebody who had a strictly clinical background, no business background, but were willing to mentor me and teach me the business end of things. I had to learn about having a budget, having a P&L. I mean, it was a lot to learn, but I had a lot of time to do it. It's been 25 years, but I attribute it to having just good mentors and a great husband who said, go do it. Go, you do it. I will make this practice work without you. Go do it.
A supportive spouse means the world for so many, including myself. So I'm glad that you shared that. You mentioned Dr. Stewart earlier in the show, and I'd like to see, you know, a little bit more about that relationship that you have with him today and, you know, maybe his influence in terms of how he's helped you in your career. And if there's any other mentors, sponsors, other individuals, either early or mid-career, where you feel that they helped change the trajectory of your career in terms of how you see business, how you see clinicians or clinical care. Because I know that as a clinician, as a healthcare provider, that the business aspect of it was never really, introduced to you. I mean, you had this very high level, well, this is how business is run, but, you know, you'll never need to worry about that. And then now we find ourselves with more and more healthcare providers moving into that space that some struggle because they were not really given a lot of a basic foundational understanding of how that works. And you mentioned a few individuals earlier as well that took the time to teach you that. I'd love to hear some of those stories and see like who you would attribute some of your successes to, your today's successes to.
Well, since you mentioned Dr. Stewart, I will give him another shout out because just a few months ago, I'm on the board of the National Association of Dental Plans. Dr. Stewart, actually, that voting seat that he holds on the ADA's code committee is representing NADP. And he just won in September the NADP's Gabriel Award. And that's basically like a lifetime achievement award for all of the work he's done in a volunteer capacity for that organization over many, many years. And so I'm really proud of him for that. And Chuck actually has an interesting role. Although he's on my team, he's not one of the dentists that reviews dental claims. He has more of kind of a regulatory focused role, especially as it relates to California, which is where he's from. So he was originally hired, I think he's getting close to 20 years. I think it's over 16 or 17 years ago to be the dental director for the state of California, because California has so many unique regulations. And but it's fascinating, and I've learned so much from him because he really has this wealth of knowledge, and he's been kind of the face of Aetna Dental in meeting with the California regulators, and actually regulators from other states as well, like Arizona, for example. So I've learned a lot from him because he's got that knowledge base that's really not so much related to clinical dentistry, although he still practices actually. But he's got that sort of foundation in the regulatory environment. And then I would love to call out another colleague that's actually not part of CVS or Aetna, but is somebody that I think really helped me see the bigger picture of this idea of interprofessional collaboration. And I also have had the great pleasure of sitting on the corporate roundtable of the National Dental Association for almost 25 years. Aetna was a founding member of their corporate roundtable, and I've been the person sitting on that roundtable representing Aetna for all of these years. And a wonderful mentor, Dr. Hazel Harper, she's a past president of the NDA, really helped me see how what we had started doing at Aetna back in 2007 with our DMI program, where we were looking at connections between chronic conditions and oral health, but really focused on the member she helped me see how we can bring in dentists and physicians and nurses and dental hygienists and sort of advance the health equity piece of it. Because if we can go beyond dentistry and we can talk with our colleagues in medicine and nursing and get them to help us advance oral health equity, that's really how we move the needle. And so it was really conversations with her. And she's the kind of person that takes a conversation and turns it into action. That's something that she taught me early on. Like, we had conversations, and then all of a sudden we were working on a program together where we were sponsoring all of these seminars across the country in different local chapters of the NDA, where we would have a speaker come in and lecture on some topic. And we would not only have dentists there, but we would invite physicians and nurses with the goal of collaborating. And that was many years ago. Now, it's advanced to the point where Dr. Harper has spearheaded a number of programs where dentists are actually training nurses to do oral exams. And it's great, because that's the way to bring oral care access to these dental deserts by other non-dental providers.
That's remarkable. And I'm glad that you had significant and influential figures like that to give you a broader perspective. I think that many times we choose mentors and sponsors that kind of fit and already align with our way of thinking, which is really detrimental to forwarding one's career. So having somebody that's really a regulatory expert, and then another individual that really helped push ideas into action, I think is remarkable. Mary Lee, you know, when you first started out, just like myself, I'm sure that you probably had a certain perspective of how the world worked, right? Go to dental school, graduate, and then suddenly follow this course, and boom, everything will be fine. But then reality came into play and kind of shattered that vision. I'd love to hear from you if there was ever like a life lesson that maybe you learned early on in your professional career that kind of changed the way that you approach people, problems, or processes, and what that was. So now that you've gone through that, you've become more efficient and an expert in that space, and you teach other people how to be prepared for those types of situations.
Some advice that I heard early in my Aetna career was sort of a quote from our former CEO and chairman, Dr. Jack Rowe. He was CEO and chairman of Aetna back around 2006, somewhere in that range. And he used to say, opportunism is not a four-letter word. And you need to take some risks, and, you know, sensible risks, but you need to take some risks. And that really stuck with me. And you just truly can't get much done if you stay in your comfort zone, especially, I mean, everything I've described, these are all things that are outside the box compared to things that people thought about with dentistry 20 years ago. So we would never be able to do all of these collaborations. We would never be able to advance oral health through CVS MinuteClinics or health hubs if we weren't thinking outside the box. So I talk to my team about this all the time. I want to empower them to be self-sufficient, be willing to take risks. I tell them that I will unconditionally back them up. And I think that's the most important lesson you can learn if you want to be able to advance.
I love how you describe that, Mary Lee, because I know that as both a leader and as a follower, having somebody that believes in you, finds the potential, nurtures that risk-taking ability, and then, you know, really walks with them in lockstep is how leadership should go. You know, tell me a little bit in terms about like your team's your leadership style, but specifically in terms of leadership development, because I know that there's a lot of resources out there and maybe you're using some of them yourself, but are there certain resources that you turn to for your own leadership development or enrichment, or that you introduce to your teammates today to help them with their professional journey in the leadership space?
My favorite leadership book is Good to Great by Jim Collins. And the most important statement in that book is that you have to have the right people on the bus. Get the right people on the bus. And that's been my philosophy. And I absolutely have the best team on my bus. And I still talk about that all of the time. And when I'm mentoring other leaders, most of my team are all individual contributors. So it's not like I'm doing a lot of management training with them. But if I'm ever mentoring another leader, that's my advice. It's so important to have the right people on your team. If I'm looking to hire someone, even if, I mean, technically I'm looking for a clinician, I'm not necessarily looking for someone that's going to be in a leadership role. Although I get very excited when somebody on my team goes from thinking just clinical and just claim review, and then can take on other projects, start to give customer presentations and really branch out beyond that sort of clinical claim review focus. So that gets me excited. But even when I'm looking at hiring a clinician, I'm looking for somebody with a really kind of diverse clinical background, somebody that's kind of seen a lot of different clinical scenarios. And I'm also really looking, it's so important, I'm looking for someone who shows adaptability. Part of the reason I'm still here after 25 years is I've adapted through a lot of different leadership, organizational changes. When I started, we were called Aetna US Healthcare. So that was, you know, we've been through a number of iterations since then. And you have to really be adaptable, open-minded, embrace change. Those are the philosophies that I try to instill in my team.
And, you know, I love how you share that because, again, you know, when you're a clinician and a healthcare provider, you fall into this mindset of it's a black and white answer, right? Like you have the diagnosis and therefore these are your only three options and only one of them has to be right. And here we are talking about being able to lead teams, you know, impact change, create new initiatives. And none of these things are ever like grounded in truth. It's all ideas with the hope and intent of improving the lives of our patients and other caregivers. So I love that those are the three qualities that you look for and probably foster more within the teams in terms of hiring candidates and bringing them on board. Mary Lee, you've been so helpful in this conversation to help educate me and the listeners in terms of the great things that you, your team, and CVS Aetna are doing. Is there one final piece of advice that you would share with the listeners today as it relates to building their career or advancing it? Maybe something when you think about, you know, how they can position themselves better when they're either speaking with leaders or creating an identity that resonates with the future of what oral health or healthcare in general could be. What would that one piece of advice be for the listeners today?
I like that you use the word identity, because we talk about that a lot within Aetna Dental. So I have this clinical team, but I'm talking every day with people in sales and product or claim operations. So people who aren't clinicians, but people who are responsible for not only running this dental benefits business, but also selling our dental plans. And we talk a lot about what do we want our identity to be. And I think, I mean, Aetna Dental is a phenomenal dental plan. Like if all you have is Aetna Dental and you have somebody else for medical, we still run a really great dental plan. But I think our true identity is being this integrated carrier. So someone who can leverage things that are happening within Aetna Medical or Aetna Behavioral Health or and now with CVS, that's really what we need to embrace. So we had talked about health equity and improving access to care and all of these millions of people that don't have access to a dentist. Having this identity as not just thinking about dental is what will help us advance that access. Now that we're part of CVS Health, we can promote things like having mobile dental vendors come to our health hubs to offer like a few days a week where they provide dental services in the health hubs. Or we can promote teledentistry. So there's telehealth and telemedicine. Teledentistry is a thing. You could actually have virtual video visits with patients. It's a great way for somebody who doesn't have access to a dentist, like nearby geographically, to still have a video consultation. It's a great way for a nurse practitioner, for example, who sees a patient who has a dental problem to be able to sort of transmit dental records or have a video visit with that patient and a remote dentist. So these are the things that allow us to advance health equity because we have an identity that's not only focused on dental, it's focused on oral health, and oral health is just health.
Mary Lee, you've been a phenomenal guest. I really want to appreciate you for being on the show today. And I'm very excited to see how you and your company are going to continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Well, thank you so much. It's been fun.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.